After my roommate's strange turn in behavior tonight, I was almost thinking they deserved each other. Soto glanced at me over Charlotte's head.
You two coming out with us tonight to celebrate the big win?
Yep! Charlotte all but squealed right at the same time I said, no.
Aw, come on, Blake. I need my bestie with me.
Ari said cajolingly, drawing my eyes back to his bare ass. While I'd been distracted, he'd turned around and dropped the towel, showcasing a backside so yummy that I wanted to sink my teeth into it. That was a weird but very accurate description for what I was feeling as I took in the sight. I squeaked and turned away, but not before realizing he had a large butterfly tattooed on his back. I heard the low husk of his laughter, but I didn't dare turn, not caring how idiotic I looked. A long minute passed.
What do you say, BFF? Going to help me celebrate?
Ari said in a voice that was scarily alluring. I'd never been attracted to the sound of a voice before, but judging by the way my insides were fluttering, a tingling, pulsing warmth spreading everywhere, Ari had changed that. Mayday, mayday, mayday! My internal alarm was blaring as I took in Ari's clothed form. He was puffing out his bottom lip beseechingly, which was somehow attractive on him instead of annoying. Okay, I found myself saying softly. Ari gave a fist bump, and then another freakishly attractive man with light brown hair was slinging an arm around his shoulder.
Let's get drunk!
He yelled, and the whole locker room cheered in agreement. Sitting in the sleek black sports car next to Ari, Walker in the backseat, my nerves were on edge. Adrenaline from the game and locker room was pulsing in my ears, an odd mix of unease and excitement that I didn't know what to do with. Charlotte had left me in the locker room to go fuck Soto. Her words, exactly. She'd said she would meet me at the bar we were headed to, and I'd somehow ended up in the car with the two hottest men I'd ever seen in my life. Although Walker somehow didn't have even close to the same effect on me as Ari. Ari and Walker's conversation about the game flowed around me like a river, their voices blending into a distant hum. I couldn't help but glance at Ari every now and then, and he seemed to return the favor, his gaze flicking my way every few seconds in a hungry way that had me shifting in my seat uncomfortably. My fingers toyed with the hem of my jersey as I tried to focus on their chatter, but my thoughts kept drifting. I couldn't help but stare at Ari's hand resting casually on the gear shift, his tattooed fingers strong and capable. They looked like they could do so much more than just handle a car. Like they... Guilt tearing into me, I pulled out my phone and texted Clark a quick hello, wondering if he'd answer me this time. Ari's voice interrupted my thoughts, and I jolted in my seat.
Who are you texting?
He asked, his tone casual. I hesitated for a moment, my heart racing. Clearing my throat, I tried to sound as nonchalant as he did. Just my boyfriend, I replied, clutching my phone tightly. From the back seat, Walker let out a knowing inhale, and I couldn't help but feel self-conscious. I knew how it appeared, like I was teetering on the edge of something I shouldn't, like I was some slut about to hurt the guy who loved me for a chance with an NHL star. There was a name for girls like that, wasn't there? Puck something? I desperately clung to the idea that I was merely making friends in a new city, even if those friends happened to be with two incredibly appealing men.
Boyfriend, huh? I knew you were too pretty to be single.
Ari drawled, not sounding upset at all. I bit down on my lip. He lives in New York. I've been with him since I was 16. He's the son of the chef, my parents' friends.
Can't be too smart,
Ari commented.
Not following you to Cali? Who knows what might be waiting to scoop you up?
Walker snorted from behind me, and I didn't dare look back at him. He runs SEC Media with his father. It keeps him quite busy. I said lamely, not adding that I'd recently obliterated his heart.
If you were my girl, there wouldn't be anything that would keep me away.
I choked on some spit in my mouth, so shocked at what he seemed to be insinuating. Good thing I have a new bestie to keep me safe, I finally said lightly, ignoring the storm of tension building in the car. Ari chuckled lowly.
Yes, that's a good thing, sunshine.
Walker and Ari went back to talking about the game, leaving me shaking in my seat for the rest of the drive. And Clark never texted me back. Chapter 6. Blake. The upscale LA bar exuded sensuality, its sleek, modern exterior basking in the soft, seductive glow of neon accents. Tall palm trees swayed in the balmy night, their fronds brushing against one another. Inside, the subdued, jazzy music set a sultry tone, as if the very air itself was caressing those who entered. We pulled up, and a valet, impeccably dressed, waited at the ready. I'd heard of this place. More relaxed than the city's trendiest clubs, it was the place celebs came to when they wanted a more quiet night out. Charlotte had actually tried to get in last week with some friends and had been rejected at the door. She'd bitched about it for hours that night when she'd come home to me sitting on our couch reading a book. My nerve shot up as I glanced at the line of eager people wound around the building. So many eyes that could stare at us when we got out. I pulled at my jersey, second-guessing keeping it on when I saw how nicely everyone was dressed. I glanced at Ari and Walker. They were dressed to impress as well. Ari emerged from the car first, igniting a chorus of cheers from the crowd. The valet was standing by my door, reaching out to open it, when Ari barked something at him. The guy immediately backed away, opening Walker's door instead, which had another cheer coming from the crowd. Ari opened my door, peering down at me with a dark promise in his eyes that had me hesitating to accept his extended hand.
Come on, pretty girl. Let's celebrate.
He murmured. Our fingertips met, and I swear there were sparks, desire and want crackling between our palms. My heart quickened in my chest as he helped me out of the car, pulling on my hand a little harder than necessary so that I fell forward into his chest. For a second, we just stared at one another. Had his mouth always been that delicious looking? The overall appeal of him was overwhelming, licking at my skin in lusty waves. He winked at me and then led me forward toward the bar by the hand he was gripping unyieldingly. I ignored the crowd, trying to pretend they weren't there even as women and men screamed Ari's name. I grew up a Sheffield. I was used to flashing lights and people shouting for me to look here, no here, at society events. But there were people crying as we walked past the line, Walker flanking us from behind. I wasn't used to that. Was this normal for an NHL player? I stared speculatively at Ari, and he just flashed me an amused grin like he wasn't fazed at all. Inside the bar, an air of sophistication blended seamlessly with an intimate ambience. Soft golden hues bathed the decor, casting a warm and inviting atmosphere over the polished mahogany bar and plush leather seating, beckoning guests to relax and enjoy. The walls displayed tasteful contemporary art, while modern golden black lighting overhead illuminated the scene with a subtle, elegant radiance. The room was buzzing with lively conversation and laughter, and I could see that a lot of Cobra players were already gathered by the bar across the room. A lot of Cobra players and Charlotte, who'd somehow managed to bang Soto and change into a skin-tight, blood-red dress before getting here. She waved to me, her other hand clinging to Soto's shirt. He was staring at me pretty intensely for a stranger, and I shifted uncomfortably.
Oh my gosh!
Ari suddenly screeched, sounding like the epitome of a tween girl as I was dragged to the right toward a very attractive-looking couple standing at the other bar in the room. Their expressions brimmed with amusement, as if they were no strangers to Ari's animated entrances.
You came!
Ari cried, his voice almost emotional as he threw an arm around the golden-haired dreamboat we'd been headed toward and hugged him tight. The man chuckled and clapped Ari on the back, who was still holding on to me with his other hand, by the way. Once again, I tried to pull away, but he wasn't having it.
Wouldn't miss it, buddy.
Ari's friend said in a delicious-sounding voice. There was an absolutely stunning woman standing next to him with long black hair and sparkling green eyes. She had a gentle smile on her lips as she glanced from the guys to me, staring at me curiously. A peaceful feeling settled over me as we gazed at each other. Kind of weird, actually, but something instantly told me this girl could be my friend. Ari let go of the golden god and pulled me forward.
Blake, I want you to meet my second best friend, Lincoln, and my third best friend, Monroe.
Ari moved to give Monroe a hug.
She's not your best friend, Ari.
Lincoln said exasperatedly, and a bit possessively, I thought, as he pulled her into his body so she couldn't give Ari a hug. I stared at them for a second longer than was normal, but it was crazy the way they seemed to gravitate around each other. Like, even though they were talking to us, they were still wrapped up in each other. A longing settled in my gut. I wanted that feeling, to know that your soul was safe in someone else's hands. I couldn't even imagine what that would have felt like.
Blake.
Lincoln repeated slowly, a glint of surprise and admiration on his face as his gaze flicked from me to Ari.
Is this the girl who stole my first best friend's spot?
He almost sounded like he'd heard of me before, but would Ari really have talked about me to his best friend after a random encounter in a restaurant? Something that felt like butterflies soared around in my chest at the thought.
Blake Sheffield, Lincoln Daniels. Lincoln Daniels, Blake Sheffield.
Ari said casually, as if it wasn't weird at all that he told him about me. It's nice to meet you, I said nervously. You don't follow hockey, do you? Monroe asked gently in a sweet, amused voice. I bit my lip and glanced shyly up at Ari, hoping he wouldn't be offended. Tonight was the first time I've ever watched. I'm more of a football girl. Ari staggered like I'd stabbed him in the chest.
You don't know what you've been missing,
he said theatrically. You! A voice blared in my head. I've been missing you. I pushed that thought away as quickly as I could. It'll be nice to have someone who isn't falling at these guys' feet, said Monroe with a smirk. I glanced at her boyfriend? Husband? He plays hockey too?
We've played on the nights together. We've actually played together since prep school.
Ari explained, and there was longing in his voice, longing that made my heart hurt for him. I wondered if I'd ever feel comfortable enough to ask him what made him leave the Knights. It was obviously a very sensitive subject.
You were awesome out there,
Lincoln said, making Ari freaking beam.
You even made up for Soto being on the ice somehow.
The mention of his name made me glance over to where Soto and Charlotte were chatting with other members of the team. Soto was glaring at us even as my roommate tried to get his attention. A shiver stretched across my skin. Ari let go of my hand, though, and instead pressed his palm against my lower back, in that space you're not supposed to go if you're just a friend. His thumb slid back and forth, and even through my jersey, it felt like electricity sparking across my skin from his touch.
So, Blake.
Lincoln drawled.
How did you become besties with my boy Ari? I would question your taste, but he did the same thing to me all those years ago, so I can only empathize with you.
Ari let out an indignant bark of laughter.
Ha! Admit it. I'm the classy one of this relationship. You would be lost without me.
Lincoln smirked, and I felt a bit dizzy from the delicious grade A alpha male energy radiating off these two guys. And then Walker decided to sidle up next to us.
Hey, guys.
He said, his voice adorably nervous. Ari sighed and rubbed a hand across his face as if he were pained.
Lincoln. Meet your number one puck slut, Mr. Disney Prince himself, Walker.
Walker groaned and turned to leave before Ari reached out and grabbed his shirt with a laugh.
Come here, buddy. We need to tell Lincoln about our new pregame ritual.
Walker's face went an almost violet shade of red before he covered it in embarrassment. It was kind of funny to see this big tattooed hottie cringing in embarrassment. Lincoln studied Walker for a moment before a slow grin spread across his beautiful face.
You were fucking amazing tonight, bro.
He said, holding out a hand for Walker to shake. Walker seemed like he was about to faint from Lincoln talking to him.
Really?
He said.
I mean, yeah, thanks. It was a great game.
Ari was shaking with laughter as his gaze bounced between the two of them, but his palm had slid to my lower hip, and I was now pressed against his side. It felt like I fit there against him like that. But then Clark's face flashed in my mind, and the sour taste of guilt was once again flooding me as memories of the past hit me hard. I felt a numbness wash over me as the icy water of the bathtub surrounded my trembling body. The pills I'd taken were doing their job, sending me into a disorienting haze. The world around me blurred, and my thoughts became muddled. I was spiraling into darkness. It was almost over. I was almost free. As I lay there, the waters seemed to consume me. Its cold fingers wrapping around my limbs, dragging me deeper into a chilling abyss. The room's harsh, artificial light cast eerie shadows on the walls, creating a surreal and haunting atmosphere. My body felt heavy and unresponsive, numb, just how I liked it. Everything was a disjointed blur, and my consciousness slipped away like a wisp of smoke. It was a sensation of sinking, sinking deeper into the unforgiving depths of despair. But then, in that suffocating darkness, a pair of hands reached into the void and grabbed hold of me. I was lifted, pulled from the cold. For a fleeting moment, I regained a fragment of awareness.
Blake!
A voice called out, filled with panic and desperation. It was Clark. His voice echoed in my foggy mind, a distant cry in the wilderness. I tried to respond, tried to reach out to him, but my body was still betraying me. The world remained a jumbled mess of sensations and disjointed images. I could see Clark's face, twisted with fear and anguish, hovering above me. And then I was no longer in the bathtub. I was being carried, my body limp and motionless, cradled in Clark's arms. His footsteps echoed in a frantic rhythm as he rushed me out of our apartment and into the cool night air. We reached the car, and I was placed gently in the back seat. I could hear Clark's ragged breathing, his voice trembling as he spoke to me, trying to keep me conscious. His words were a lifeline in the darkness, a desperate plea for me to stay with him. The car sped through the city streets, its tires screeching against the asphalt. Sirens wailed in the distance, drawing nearer with each passing second. I was fading, slipping further away from the world. And then there was the harsh, fluorescent lighting of a hospital room, the sterile smell of antiseptic stinging my nostrils. I could feel the weight of monitors and tubes connected to my body, a reminder of the fragility of life. Clark, his face etched with relief and anguish, was sitting by my bedside, holding my hand as if it were the most precious thing in the world. He had saved me, and I owed him everything.
Blake?
Ari's voice called, and I was jolted back to the present where I stood pressed against his hard body. Sorry, I'm just going to use the restroom real quick, I mumbled, feeling the faint blush on my cheeks. I needed a break from him. I couldn't breathe, couldn't think, couldn't do the right thing when he was around. I pulled away from him, and he let me go without a fuss. It was all I could do to keep my footsteps steady as I headed toward the hallway that led to the bathroom. I stood there in the dimly lit restroom of the bar, my eyes meeting my reflection in the mirror. And for a moment, I hardly recognized the person staring back at me. It was as if a veil had been lifted, revealing a version of myself I'd never seen before. Gone was the haunted, hollow look that had followed me for so long. The exhaustion that had etched deep lines under my eyes had seemingly vanished. Instead, I saw a face that was alive, vibrant, and, dare I say it, happy. I shook my head, my heart racing like a hummingbird's wings as I splashed some cool water on my face, attempting to calm the storm swirling inside my chest. Okay, I was fine. I could go out there, establish firm boundaries, be friends. I pulled out my phone first, though, hovering over the keyboard as I thought about sending Clark another text, but he hadn't even read my other one according to the red receipts, so I didn't bother. All my good intentions seemed to run away when I finally stepped back into the hallway and my senses were immediately overtaken by Ari's arresting presence. He leaned casually against the wall, his strong frame surrounded by the soft, muted lighting. His dazzling green gaze cast a spell over me as we stood there in the hall. You didn't need to wait. I managed to murmur, though my voice betrayed my struggle to maintain composure. Ari's response was a slow, seductive smile that made my knees feel weak.
Someone would be a fool not to wait for you, sunshine.
His words hung in the air, heavy with unspoken desires, and I could feel the invisible thread that drew us together, weaving a tapestry of attraction and longing. My heart pounded in my chest and my voice trembled as I met his unwavering gaze. Ari, I began, my voice laced with a husky undertone. We can only be friends.
Yeah, sunshine. And why is that?
He asked, crowding me against the wall with his hard, perfect body. His spicy orange and leather scent washed over me and I took a deep breath, wanting as much as I could get. The way he was staring at me, it was like he wanted to eat me alive, like he was starstruck by my mere presence, like I was his good thing in life, because I have a boyfriend.
You should probably put him on notice then, sunshine.
He murmured with a slightly crazed grin. Of what? I whispered.
Of the fact he's about to lose his girl.
His lips brushed against mine then, so, so softly, and it felt like a piece of my heart was clicking into place. Ari pulled back and stared at me for a long moment.
Fuck it.
He swore roughly and his lips crashed against my mouth. His tongue licked into me, sliding against mine, changing my fucking life. I'd never been kissed like this, like someone would die without the taste of me. I broke the kiss and stepped back, our heavy breaths mingling in the air. He smiled at me, the kind of smile that could break a million hearts, that would break mine, and he pressed his lips against mine one more time. And then I ran.
Chapter 7. Ari. I watched my phone, tracking her across town as her Uber took her home. That kiss was a revelation, a seismic shift in my existence. I'd obviously kissed and been kissed before, but nothing compared to the fire that had ignited between us in that stolen moment. It was as if the universe had meant for our lips to meet. And she'd kissed me back. I know she had. She'd run away, and I'd let her go. Just for tonight. I'd had months to wrap around the idea of her. I could give her some time to adjust to me, too. Obsession didn't even begin to cover what I felt. It was more than that. It was an insatiable craving, a need that clawed at me from the inside. I thought I'd known what it meant to desire someone, to desire her. But tasting her, feeling the soft press of her lips, the sweet taste of her mouth against mine, it was like a drug, an addiction I couldn't shake. The promise of what could be between us was better than anything else I'd ever had, anything else I'd ever dreamed. She had no idea of the relentless yearning that had taken root. I was a man possessed, and she was the forbidden fruit I couldn't resist. I'd been looking for Blake Shepfield forever. I'd fucking yearned for her all this time. No one else was good enough because they weren't her. No one else could ever be enough. And then I saw her on that billboard. I finally had her back, and I'd stop at nothing to make her mine. She might not see it coming, but destiny had already set its course, and I was powerless to fight it. My phone buzzed, jolting me out of my reverie. It was a text from the PI I'd hired to help me find Blake. It was also looking into Blake's boyfriend. Actually, I was going to start calling him Blake's other, because I couldn't take the thought of anyone other than me having the title of her boyfriend. I opened the message, hoping for something, anything, that would help me out. The text read, "Boyfriend is squeaky clean. Word on the street is he's not giving up on Blake. He's told everyone she's the love of his life. He just landed in L.A. this evening. Return flight tomorrow for an important meeting." Fuck. I was hoping he was disinterested enough that it wouldn't bother him not to hear from her, but I'd obviously misjudged the guy. Anger and unease coiled in my chest as unbidden images of him wrapped around her tonight, of him touching that perfect body that I'd only begun to explore. "Not happening," I muttered a curse under my breath, wishing he were the stereotypical rich guy with a closet full of skeletons. It would make things so much easier. But it was okay. I could work with hard. I'd been doing it since my mom dropped me off at the group home as a toddler and called it good. I returned to the bar where Lincoln was wrapped around Monroe, his tongue down her throat. Ah, young love. Couldn't wait for my tongue to return to Blake's throat, or whatever the romantic version of that was. I felt much better seeing my buddies here. I still couldn't believe that they'd come. Lincoln hated L.A., and he had to be at his first game of the season by noon tomorrow. Made me feel all warm and fuzzy. For a second, I'd had my three favorite people around me. Couldn't wait for that to be my new life. I cleared my throat because, as much as I was all about celebrating these two love muffins, I needed some guidance at the moment. I launched into the story as soon as Lincoln unstuck his lips from Monroe's face. "What car did he rent?" Lincoln asked casually after I was done. I chuckled. "A rich guy like him probably has a driver like you." I pulled up the information from the PI, though, just in case he'd said. "He rented an Audi R8, I said, my eyebrows raising. Figures he would have terrible taste in cars. Lincoln got a mischievous glint in his eyes. Well, why don't you figure out something that could happen to the car? He suggested innocently. Even us rich guys don't like a little legal trouble. I gaped at Lincoln and then glanced at Monroe, who was blushing and biting down on her bottom lip, not looking shocked at all. He's more devious than I've given him credit for, I mused. Monroe's eyes sparkled.
You have no idea,
she replied. There was a story there, one I was very interested in, but it would have to wait. I had plans to wreck, and a girl to get.
Blake. I trudged toward my apartment door, my thoughts a chaotic mess, each step heavier than the last because they took me away from him. That kiss still pulsed through me. I could still feel him there, an exquisite phantom pain that I missed, that I was worried I would always miss. I couldn't help but compare it to the feel of Clark. Ari's kiss was an all-consuming blaze that threatened to destroy me. Clark's kiss had never set me on fire, not even that first time. And maybe I could have lived with that because I didn't know what it could be like. What was I supposed to do now that I'd been enlightened? How was I expected to go back to the way it was before? What if I couldn't? As I reached for my apartment key, my hand trembled slightly. The events of the past few days had been a lot. They'd unraveled my sense of self, however fragile it had been before. The memory of Ari's glittering green gaze staring at me in the darkened hallway was haunting me, taunting me with his seductive promises. I wanted to go back to him. I wanted more. Right as I inserted the key into the lock, a voice emerged from the shadowy entryway of my building.
Blake.
I jumped, my heart leaping into my throat. Clark, what are you doing here? My voice wavered, caught somewhere between astonishment and confusion as I slowly turned to look at him. After days of either silence or one-word answers, his appearance now was a little shocking. My boyfriend stepped out of the shadows, his dark hair disheveled and his green eyes reflecting hints of exhaustion. His usually immaculate suit was wrinkled, his tie askew. More guilt flooded me as I studied him, my constant companion the last few days, it seemed. While Clark was undeniably handsome, he seemed like a cheap replica as he stood there, like Ari was the original and everyone else that existed could never compare.
You've been ignoring me.
He snapped, his voice sharp and frustrated.
Of course I was going to come check what's wrong.
I frowned, not understanding what he was saying, even as I winced at the rawness in his voice. We stared at each other for a long minute, the awkwardness there feeling like a cavernous gulf I didn't know how to cross over. Finally, he reached out toward me, his expression softening.
Come here, sweetheart. I need to hold you.
Instinctively, I stepped into his embrace, just like I'd been doing since I was 16, allowing him to envelop me in his arms. But even as I leaned into his familiar warmth, everything felt wrong. There was a void there now, one that Clark's presence couldn't fill. The contrast between his touch and Ari's was stark, and the wrong sensation gnawed at the edges of my consciousness.
Can I come in?
He finally murmured, his voice harried and exhausted.
I've been waiting here since 7 for you to get home. I just kind of panicked today when you didn't answer again, and I hopped on a plane. I've got to be back in New York for a meeting tomorrow at 11.
I was so confused. He was the one who hadn't been answering me. I was struck, though, by what a big deal it was for him to be here. Clark was a creature of habit. Everything in his life was organized and in its place. We'd always been opposites like that, and my disorganization had always driven him crazy. Yeah, of course. Let's go inside and we can talk more. I quickly said, feeling like I needed to appease him, please him, like I always felt when it came to my life in New York. I opened the door and flicked on the light. It spilled out onto the shadowed entry where we were standing. He took a step forward and then stopped, a frown on his lips as he cast a curious gaze over me, evidently noticing the hockey jersey I wore for the first time.
You were at the game tonight? I didn't know you liked hockey.
I grappled with what should have been an easy response. I finally stammered. Charlotte had some tickets, and she insisted I come along. I figured why not. My attempt at casual indifference felt hollow, even to my own ears. Clark's gaze bore into me, his green eyes searching mine as if he sensed there was more to the story. I must have been better at hiding things than I thought, though, because he stepped inside without asking any more questions. "Welcome to my humble abode," I said with a flourish, a feeble attempt at lightness as we walked into the small apartment. It was a far cry from the cluttered, colorful space I had in New York City, but I wasn't living alone anymore, so I couldn't decorate how I wanted. Everything about the place was mundane. Fine, but it definitely didn't feel like home. But then again, nothing had felt like home since my parents died. I went down the hallway to let Waldo out of my bedroom, giving myself a minute to love on him before I went back out there. When I returned to the living room, Waldo pattering next to me, Clark was staring at the furniture like it had personally offended him. It was similar to how he'd always looked at my New York place. Both were a stark departure from the luxurious lifestyle he was accustomed to, that I'd once been accustomed to. But there wasn't a price on the freedom living without it meant for me. "It's all right to sit down, you know. The furniture won't bite," I said dryly, trying not to let any shame creep in. Clark's face went blank, and he reached out to pull me into him, the other hand gently cupping my cheek, his thumb brushing against my skin.
"You deserve so much more, Blake. You could have so much more."
I stiffened at the clear reference to his marriage proposal. I was farther away from that now than I'd been before, but he didn't know that.
"I'll talk about something else,"
he murmured finally.
"Or maybe we shouldn't talk at all."
He leaned forward, his lips hovering just inches from mine. I flinched, my heart racing. It was as if 1,000 voices inside me were screaming, urging me to resist, to pull away from what was no longer right. "You said I've been ignoring you, but why haven't you been answering me?" I pressed, hoping he would miss my hesitance. A furrow etched across his forehead at my question, a subtle crease marring his otherwise chiseled features. He opened his mouth to answer and pound, pound, pound. The banging on the front door reverberated through the room, and Clark's hand slipped away. He stalked toward the door, swinging it open as Waldo barked and yipped like crazy. 3 stern-faced police officers stood on the doorstep. For a second, I had a flashback of a different set of cops standing at a different doorway on another dark night. "Pull yourself together, Blake."
"Which one of you owns the R8?
One of the officers snapped, his tone laced with authority. Clark's jaw tensed as he replied through gritted teeth.
"I'm renting it." "Well, you're under arrest. We got a tip and checked your car. Turns out you've been a naughty boy."
With that, he held up a small bag filled with a suspicious white powder. I stared at it confused, waiting for the punchline, before staring at Clark with uncertainty.
"Don't look at me like that,"
he snapped at me before turning his attention to the police.
"That's not mine."
His features were calm, but his voice was sharp with anger and disbelief. The officer laughed and shook his head mockingly.
"That's what they all say, Fancy Pants. You're coming with us, and we'd suggest you not make this difficult." "This is ridiculous. Do you know who I am?"
Clark snarled, his voice rising in a crescendo of protest as they handcuffed him and led him toward the door.
"Think we haven't heard that before here in La La Land?"
Another officer snorted.
"Call Ed and stay here."
Clark threw at me as they pushed him out the door. Ed was general counsel for his company, an absolute shark. He'd know what to do. I stood there, trembling with a mix of fear, confusion, and anger as the door slammed shut, trying not to think about the fact that the overarching feeling coursing through my veins was relief because he hadn't kissed me. Chapter 8. Blake. I gasped, my heart racing as I peered around my dark room, trying to figure out what had woken me up. The muffled sounds of screaming came then from somewhere in the house, or maybe it was just outside. I frowned and slipped out of bed, my feet making almost no noise on the carpeted floor as I tiptoed to my bedroom door, opened it, then carefully peeked out. There was screaming again, and I realized it was my parents. They were the ones yelling so loud. Mom and Dad never talk like that. They were always extremely gentle with each other. All my friends said they were gross because they were completely in love all the time. Nerves and fear gnawed at me as I opened the door wider and made my way down the hall, watching the scary way my shadow crept across the walls. I could hear them clearly now, their voices filled with so much anger and sadness, things I also had never heard from them before.
How could you do this to me? To us?
My father raged before he released a harsh sob, the sound absolutely terrifying. It's not what you think, John. Nothing happened. My mother's voice quivered. I didn't understand what was going on, but I knew I had to make them stop fighting. We didn't do this in our family. They always told me that when I got angry. Slowly, I tiptoed down the hallway, clutching my favorite stuffed bear, Mr. Whiskers. I would tell them that everything would be okay, that they should stop yelling, just like they always told me. As I turned the corner, I came to a halt. The room was darker, the shapes on the walls more menacing. I saw my father standing in the kitchen doorway, his face twisted in anger, holding something I couldn't quite make out. It gleamed in the dim light. Daddy! I tried to scream, but no words came out. My voice had disappeared, leaving only a silent cry. There was a deafening noise, a bang that echoed in my ears. I jolted awake, hot tears streaming down my face as Waldo leaned on my chest, licking me all over as he tried to comfort me. It had only been a nightmare. What had happened that night was long in the past. I was fine. I chanted it over and over again, like if I said it enough, it would make it true. The images were etched in my mind, though, and I didn't think they'd ever go away. The Sheffields hadn't believed in therapy, but as a 10-year-old little girl, I sure could have used it. I could have gone now. I should have gone now. But my list of problems was so long, I was too embarrassed to talk about them. Thanks, Waldo, I whispered, softly stroking his fur. He always woke me up from my nightmares. At least since I moved out from under Mara's thumb and he was allowed to sleep in my bed. I didn't know what I'd do without him. Reluctantly, I slipped out of bed, heading to the shower to wash off the salty sweat that coated my body from the dream. The scalding water pricked at my skin and I soaked in the pain, fingering the line of scars along my left inner thigh. My fingers itched to grab a razor to release some of the hurt that was always bubbled up under my skin. But I had an audition today, and new cuts wouldn't do. Later, I sat at the kitchen bar, nursing my coffee, the warmth of the cup seeping into my palms as I stared down at my phone. It had been 4 long days since the hockey game and Clark's abrupt arrest, and we hadn't spoken on the phone. Ed, Clark's lawyer, had been the one to relay the information about Clark's release and his subsequent flight back to New York. The terse text messages Clark had sent in response to my attempt at conversation since then hadn't gotten us anywhere. It felt like he was somehow blaming me for what had happened, even though I didn't know how he could have come to that conclusion. Still, the unease festered beneath my skin, making it difficult to concentrate on anything else. Charlotte stumbled through the front door, her disheveled appearance telling a story of another wild night out. I glanced up from my coffee, taking her in. She looked pale, hungover, and positively miserable. Rough night? I asked, trying to keep the annoyance out of my voice. She'd been partying with Soto nonstop since meeting him at the game, coming in at all hours of the night. I think she'd even been an hour late to a job yesterday because she was so hungover. I didn't know if I was annoyed because she'd been waking me up constantly, or jealous because she had someone who wanted to be around her all the time. Charlotte let out a groan, sinking into a chair across from me. You have no idea. She mumbled, her words slurred from fatigue and alcohol. I was about to offer her some water when she dropped a casual bombshell. So Ari was at the party last night. Looked pretty cozy with that actress from one of the new drama series. He couldn't keep his hands off her. I tried to hide my reaction, keeping my expression carefully neutral as I took a sip of coffee. But my hands were shaking. That slithery feeling, the nasty one I felt in the locker room, it was there again. The mention of Ari at some party getting cozy with another woman? It shouldn't have bothered me. It was nothing to me. I had no right to be jealous or hurt. Yeah? I said nonchalantly, feigning disinterest. That's good for him. He seemed like a nice guy. Charlotte shot me a curious look, probably expecting a stronger reaction. I couldn't blame her for thinking it was odd, but I didn't want to admit the hold Ari had on me, feelings for him that had rooted much deeper than they should have. I refused to think about that kiss. Charlotte rambled on about her wild night with Soto, and I tried to hang on every word, anything that would distract me from thinking about Ari Lancaster, because he was nothing to me, right? I entered the audition room hours later, my steps echoing in the sterile white-walled chamber. The harsh glare of the fluorescent lights illuminated a long table where an intimidating panel of agents and clients sat, their expressions like stone. It was a daunting scene, one I'd never get used to, no matter how many I attended, and one that made my heart race as I walked to the center. The other models waiting their turn lined the room, tall and poised. They exuded an air of confidence that I'd never have. Their svelte figures, flawless skin, and designer outfits screamed perfection. They exchanged polite nods and strained smiles as we all silently acknowledged the cutthroat competition. As I began my walk, I tried to project confidence, but the critical eyes tracking my every step weighed me down. The panel's whispered comments cut through me like a knife. Her posture needs work. She lacks the it factor. Her look is too ordinary. Panic coursed through me as I felt my self-esteem plummet with each critique. The room grew stifling and my chest tightened with anxiety. I couldn't shake the feeling that they were peeling back my layers, revealing every insecurity I had ever hidden. Desperation clawed at me and I sneaked a glance in the mirror behind the staff. In its unforgiving reflection, I saw every single one of my flaws magnified, highlighted in agonizing detail. Their gazes were locked onto me, analyzing every supposed imperfection. I'd been a fool to even show up today. I did much better when I was hired based on my pictures. No one ever thought I was enough in person. I kept my head high, struggling to maintain my composure the entire time I was standing there. The second they said I could leave, I bolted, not bothering to stay and see if I'd been chosen. There was no way I had. As I stepped out of the unforgiving audition room, the weight of everything bore down on me like a leaden cloak. Panic surged, and the walls of the building were suddenly closing in on me. It was as if every set of eyes in the vicinity were dissecting my every flaw. My breathing grew rapid, shallow gasps that failed to fill my lungs. My vision blurred at the edges and the world spun around me. My legs shook as I stumbled down the corridor, my steps unsteady. I was on the verge of collapsing, the panic attack gripping me in its merciless grasp. The world swirled with voices and faces, a nightmarish kaleidoscope that threatened to consume me. In that desperate moment, I spotted an alleyway just ahead. I pushed myself forward, each step feeling like an eternity, until I reached the sanctuary of the dimly lit alley. As I huddled against the alley's cold, graffiti-covered walls, the panic attack reached its peak. I trembled uncontrollably, tears streaming down my face as I struggled to catch my breath. It felt as though the world had turned against me. But in that dark, secluded space, I found a moment of respite, a fleeting escape from the relentless scrutiny that had nearly brought me to my knees.
Blake?
A concerned, familiar voice called from somewhere nearby. A second later, I heard someone walking toward me. I blinked away my tears and, through my blurry vision, glanced up, hot shame licking at my insides when I saw Ari approaching, his face etched with genuine concern. He crouched in front of me, his eyes locked onto mine, and his voice softened with worry.
"Hey, sunshine,"
he said gently.
"What's going on?"
His presence alone felt like a lifeline, and I struggled to find the words to explain the overwhelming rush of emotions that had consumed me. "Just a bad day," I finally squeaked.
"This looks like more than just a bad day, but we can go with that story if it makes you feel better,"
he said, reaching out to brush a tear from my face. All thoughts escaped me as I watched him bring the tear to his lips. He licked it off, and he seemed to savor the taste.
There. Now we can share the bad day.
He murmured with a wink, completely unrepentant for the weird-as-hell thing he'd just done. A shocked cough came out of me, but a part of me also felt a little bit better, because now it kind of felt like we were connected, and I couldn't help but like that.
Let's get you out of here, yeah?
He asked, holding out his hand. Embarrassment settled in then, and I became acutely aware of my disheveled state. Crouched down in this dirty alley, my cheeks stained with tear tracks and my eyes probably swollen and puffy, I was a mess. In contrast, Ari looked perfect. His crisp white Henley clung to his broad chest, contrasting with the rich darkness of his jeans. His raven black hair fell gracefully over his forehead, emphasizing his striking features. My cheeks flushed as I continued to study him.
Let me take care of you, Blake,
he murmured. Ari's offer to take care of me, to provide a distraction, hung in the air. He was waiting patiently like he had all day, even though he must have had a million better things to do than rescue this mess in front of him. I froze.
Not like that,
he yelped, holding up his hands frantically.
I mean, yes, I'd like to take care of you like that, but fuck.
He brushed his hands down his face and a giggle squeaked out of me. He moved his hands and grinned shyly.
You like me making a fool in front of you, sunshine? That make you feel better? Because I'll do it all day, if it'll make you smile.
No one'll be mad about us hanging out, I asked cautiously, Charlotte's story about his girl from last night front and center in my head. Ari's confusion over my question was clear, and he shook his head firmly.
No one will mind,
he assured me, his tone unwavering.
And even if they did, I wouldn't care. You'll find I'm a ride-or-die kind of guy, baby.
Okay, let's go, I whispered finally, taking a hold of his hand, remembering another time with another boy when I'd felt the same way, like I was stepping off the edge of a precipice and bracing for the fall.
That's my girl.
He smiled, helping me up and then leading me down the alley, back to the road, our hands still intertwined. I gazed up at him one more time as we made our way to where his fancy black sports car was parked, a ticket on the dash from his illegal parking. Nothing more than friends, right? I questioned.
For today, sunshine. Just besties for today.
He helped me into the car and reached across my lap to buckle my seatbelt.
I'm only doing my bestie duties,
he said seriously as he clicked it into place. He smelled so freaking good. I had to concentrate on keeping my back plastered against my seat so I didn't lean in and take a bigger sniff. Lincoln must really enjoy this part of the friendship, I remarked. He threw back his head and laughed, and now I'm the one who seems starstruck, because the sound of it is the sexiest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, no doubt. It's the best part for him, for sure.
We hovered there, him leaning over me, big, silly grins on both our faces, and I suddenly couldn't remember any of the reasons I was upset today.
Ari. My hands gripped the steering wheel, but my attention wasn't on the road ahead. Nope. It was fixated on her, Blake, sitting in my passenger seat, her beauty a force that couldn't be ignored. There were still tear tracks on her cheeks and a desolation in her eyes that made me want to burn the world to the ground for daring to make her sad. Her pain sliced me to fucking pieces. Her tears were the most beautiful and the worst thing I'd ever seen. She'd always been my sad girl, though, since the day we'd first met. From the moment she'd arrived at the group home after her parents' deaths, tears were an ever-present companion. More often than not, I'd find her curled up in some corner, sobbing over what she'd lost. I'd had it much better than her. I couldn't remember the parents who kicked me to the curb, but she'd actually watched her parents disappear, watched her dad kill her mom, and then himself. The file the PI had put together on her hadn't offered much detail about her adoptive parents, just that they were wealthy socialites who frequented NYC's social scene. But it didn't take a fortune teller to guess they hadn't been good to her. that they'd maybe even been abusive. Made me even more fucking mad at her other, because he'd done a piss-poor job of protecting her the last couple of years. If I hadn't lost her, I would have done everything to keep her safe. Anything. Blake had always been an intoxicating mix of fragility and strength, a masterpiece if there ever was one. Now that I had her back, I would make it my life's mission to see her smile, to replace the haunted expression in her eyes with happiness. She was staring out her window now, and I had to hold myself back from tipping her head toward me so I could look at her, gauge how she was doing. Blake was so in her head, she hadn't even thought to ask how I'd found her, which was a good thing, since saying that I happened to spot her as I was driving on a random street in one of the biggest cities in the world seemed a little unbelievable. Still a better answer, though, than telling her I'd been waiting outside her audition because I was her living, breathing, obsessed stalker. I turned on some Tay-Tay to try to get her talking, and sure enough, after High Infidelity started playing, a banger of a track, by the way, she turned her head back toward me.
I'm starting to believe there's nothing wrong with you.
She blurted out, a gorgeous shade to her cheeks as I glanced at her, amused. Sunshine, you might be onto something there, I grinned, flashing her what I knew was a panty-melting smile. Her blush deepened. I did think it was perfect that I was so obsessed with her I'd followed her to L.A., bugged her phone, and planted drugs in her boyfriend's car. All the other fun things I had planned were pretty perfect as well. A few minutes later, I pulled up to a bakery I'd found my second day here, when I needed help with my midnight brownie tradition. Her violet eyes stared at me questioningly. I find that sugar always makes me feel better, I mused, opening the car door. She hesitated, her gaze flickering to the tempting treats on display in the window.
Not when you make a living on how you look,
she whispered, a hint of uncertainty in her voice. I made a show of running my gaze from her toes to her angelic face until she was squirming on my seat. Sugar won't change perfection, Blake. It'll just make it sweeter. A bashful smile graced her lips, and she searched my face as if she was making sure I really meant that.
Sugar does sound good,
she finally murmured, something that looked a lot like adoration in her eyes. Good job, Ari, I told myself, because it was important to give yourself mental high fives when you were fucking amazing. Stay right there, I told her hurriedly when she tried to open her own fucking door. Was it weird I got actual anxiety at the thought of her letting herself out? Yes. Was I going to worry about that? No. I hustled to her door and opened it, pulling just a little harder on her hand than I needed to so that she fell against my chest. I was taking any opportunity I had to have her touch me. The bakery was a cozy little place tucked away in a quiet corner of the city. A small smile caught Blake's lips when we stepped in and she caught a whiff of all the sugar. She obviously had good taste because it smelled bomb in here. Blake scanned the glass display. I usually would have scanned it too, but of course I was watching her, because that seemed to be all I did nowadays. Her eyes darted from one tempting treat to the next, but she seemed to get more agitated the longer she looked. The way she doubted herself puzzled me. She was nothing short of perfection. Why couldn't she see that? Taking a chance, I leaned over the glass counter, almost jumping when I saw how intensely the teen employee was staring at me. A little less eye contact, thank you very much. She'll have a strawberry cupcake, I declared, confident in my choice. It had been her favorite back when we were kids. She arched an eyebrow, a hint of surprise dancing in her eyes as she glanced up at me.
What if I don't want that?
A playful grin tugged at the corners of my lips. Well, you can have whatever you want, but I just have a good feeling about the strawberry cupcake. Now would be the perfect time to tell her who I really am. I'm not sure why I haven't yet. Maybe it would be an easy way to get her back. But if I'm being honest, I haven't said anything because I'm afraid she forgot me. That the 8 months in the group home together has disappeared from her mind. When it's stuck in mine forever. For now, I was content to savor the reunion, to make her fall in love with the Ari I was today.
I actually do want the strawberry cupcake,
she finally whispered, before frowning as the employee boxed it up.
It used to be my favorite. I haven't had one since.
Her words trailed off. Since when? She shot me a smile, but this time there was a hint of wistful sadness lurking behind it.
since I was a little girl.
I didn't press her any further, and after I ordered the same thing, just in case Blake wanted more after she finished hers, we got back in the car. She was lost in her head again until we pulled up to the gates of the neighborhood where I was renting a house. It cost an arm and a leg, but with my year timeline, I didn't want to invest in property when we'd be back in Dallas next year. Emphasis on the we. I was sure I could educate Blake on all the finer things about Dallas life, which was basically everything.
This is gorgeous. Is it your house?
She asked, her voice tinged with a hint of nervousness. I didn't know what she was nervous about. I knew from her file her adopted parents had been like the parents in Richie Rich, so she would be used to nice things. Yep, home sweet home. Don't worry, I won't charge you admission, I teased, giving her a wink. She bit her lip and her shoulders finally relaxed. She was smiling as we got out of the car. I led her up the steps and through the grand front door, making a mental note to introduce her to my housekeeper, Miss Carly, who'd been with me since I'd signed my rookie contract. She was like family to me, and I'd brought her with me to Cali. She lived in the guest house in the backyard. Even after all these years of making money, it was still weird to think I lived somewhere with a fucking guest house and a housekeeper. Kid version of me would have called me a pretentious asshole. Kid in me would have only been kinda right. Miss Carly happened to be the best cook in the entire world, though, and I would have been an idiot not to keep her around. I parked in the driveway and led her to the front door, unlocking it and kicking off my shoes. Her silence continued as we walked through the foyer, gazing around curiously. I rubbed the back of my head, trying to see it from her perspective. I guess it wasn't very homey. No pictures or knickknacks anywhere. I couldn't exactly tell her I wasn't really interested in decorating until she moved in. I noticed then that Blake's eyes were glued to the skin peeking out from where my shirt had risen. She looked positively starving. Oh, you like that, sunshine? There are plenty of abs for you to stare at where that came from. Blake saw that I'd caught her staring, and she flushed and quickly glanced away. Don't worry, bestie. You can look as much as you want. It's part of the friendship package, I told her as I grabbed her hand and led her into the sunken living room, my favorite part of the house. She just groaned and covered her face with her free hand. It's okay. I know I'm a thirst trap.
A thirst trap?
She snorted. I wanted to say I could be her thirst trap, but again I restrained myself. I'd have to remind Lincoln how much of a saint I was. Again. My phone buzzed right as Blake pulled away to take in the views from the floor-to-ceiling windows that lined my living room. I grabbed it and saw it was Lincoln. Speak of the devil. Lincoln, how's Operation Blake going? I glanced over to where Blake was staring outside, rubbing her bottom lip absentmindedly. Me. Well, it's going. Lincoln. That good, huh? Me. ... Lincoln. Let me know if you need any cuffs. What did that have to do with anything? Me. Cuffs? Why would I need... Wait. You're not talking about some kinky sex thing, are you? Lincoln. ... Me. ...